Hello and welcome to another episode of Living with Dying. I'm really delighted today to meet two of the youngest people I've ever interviewed on the subject of death and dying. And I suppose that's kind of inevitable because most of us probably don't meet or come across death when we're very young. But today I'm with Pippa Largy and Grace Mitchell, who've become friends. A lovely story. We're recording in the Thames Hospice, which is where they met. It's a lovely story, but it had sad beginnings, didn't it, really? Because you both lost your fathers. Would you like to tell me, who'd like to start?
You can start.
So we both were, like, well, obviously not we were in the hospice, but both of our dads were in the hospice in 2022. So my dad was called Senan Largy, and he was there from, he was only there for two weeks in April 2022.
My dad was here for a week, or was it just over a week, in July. His name was Clive Mitchell.
July, which year?
2022.
So the same year. But you didn't meet at that point?
No, we met, I want to say, October 2023, which was when we both did a bungee jump for the hospice, and we met at a family event through Sonia, actually.
Well, let's get on to what you've got up to since then a little bit later. But tell me, first of all, about your fathers again. Who would like to talk more about what your father was like?
Well, my dad, I would say he was quite popular. He was like, quite well known. Really funny, very, like, charismatic and confident. Very loving, like, and very interested in people. Like, he took a genuine interest to everyone. And he could hold a conversation with anyone. Very calm, like, even when he was dying, which I can imagine was so scary because he only got a 6-week prognosis from when he was diagnosed. You know, there's no time at all, a month and a half, and especially because he had, well, at the time, a 16-year-old daughter. Literally never saw him angry, upset. He would have been upset, but he didn't show it outwardly. He was always very philosophical and, yeah, just a very lovely person.
Yeah. My dad, I describe him as, like, my best friend growing up, because he was basically the stay-at-home dad. He was a gardener, and he would take me and my sister to school, and, like, he'd do my hair in the morning, and then I'd go to work with him sometimes, and I loved that. I wouldn't help, I'd just play with the dogs. And then even when he got his diagnosis of cancer, he battled it for 2 years, and, like, he was always very strong when it came to it, and, like, he wasn't gonna give up. And I think even when we knew that he, like, was gonna die, he was, like, I'm sure it was difficult to stay positive, and I'm not sure if I'd use the word positive, but he was still, like, always smiling for us, and he always just wanted what's best for us. And yeah.
And although you didn't meet while your fathers were here, you both presumably went through horrendous times while you were here, and yet you seem to appreciate the hospice.
Yeah.
So tell me what it was like actually being in the hospice with your fathers.
I mean, I think, like, I never had any resentment towards the hospice, because if anything, it, like, really helped. You know, it's not like the hospice did anything wrong. It's unfortunate that he had to go here, but, you know, it's not anyone's fault. So my dad was initially in Wexham for a few weeks, I'm not sure. But that was, you know, Wexham was so overcrowded. Again, not, you know, not anyone's fault. It's kind of the end of COVID. It's just a really busy hospital, and they did the best they could do. And it was really good, but he was in a room with, like, 4 other people, I think, and they all had different things that they were in for. And that was really stressful. And you're actually technically only allowed one person by the bedside. But my mum was like, no, I'll go with her. When they tried to say it, and they were like, oh, no, yeah, fair enough. And he just, I could tell that he wasn't happy there. Well, you know, not that he would have been happy, but it was just quite, like, tense and everything. And then he went home for a bit, which he really enjoyed. And then when he got offered a place at the hospice, he actually didn't want to go. Just because I think he thought, probably thought that the hospice would be like the hospital, which you would, but it was, honestly, he was thrilled at his room. He was like, I'm like in a hotel room. I'm like, I know. Even things like, what's it called? Like the skylight. you know, a view of the lake. They all made such a difference. And having a private room was amazing. It was just so much easier to visit him, so much more relaxed. And yeah, we were really grateful to the hospice. And the staff were lovely. And then I met Sonia through the hospice. And I think he could see that that really helped. Although when he, so Sonia actually met my dad, and he was like really ill. He was on morphine at that point. And he was kind of in and out of consciousness. But he hadn't really said anything. She walked in and he gave her the biggest smile that he gave anyone in those 2 weeks. Like more than me. And I was like, oh. But I think, you know, I don't know how much he could actually sort of intake at that point. But I'm sure he got the gist. So it literally, it made the last 2 weeks, which is probably worst 2 weeks of my life, but it made it a lot better than it could have been.
So we should explain who Sonia is.
Yes. Yeah. Sonia is a member of the, what's it called, children's support team.
Yes.
She is like a counsellor and a family worker, and she's amazing. Mm-hmm. We love Sonia. Grace and I both had Sonia, and that's,
yeah,
I would say that's probably how we met mainly.
I'd agree.
Because like, it was through the bungee jump, I think, because we both had her. She got us in touch, and she's literally like, I would say, turned both of our lives around.
Yeah.
Or made it so much better than it could have been.
Definitely.
So now your turn. Tell me about your father's experience in the hospice. Did you dread him coming in?
No, not at all. So similar to Pippa's, my dad was in Guildford Hospital, and it was just terrible, like, that week, because it was the summer as well, and I think it was the hottest summer we've ever had. It was, like, 40 degrees, and it was just so hot. And he did manage to get a side room, but, like, I remember coming in some days and, like, he'd be in a lot of distress because the nurses are so busy and, like, they couldn't tend to him when he needed. And so it would kind of be, like, a waiting game each morning, like, to see if we'd get a call, if a bed was available at the hospice. And then when it finally was, I, like, remember the relief we all had. And he came and, like, he immediately settled into his room with the aircon, which was lovely.
Yeah. Actually, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, but the aircon he loved. And the nurses here as well. Like, I think the first one I ever met, I forget her name, but she would, like, call him, like, loads of lovely nicknames, like Sweet Pea and Sweetheart. So it was just, like, a breath of fresh air coming here.
And were you both present when your father's died?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I was just going to say, they really facilitate literally all your needs. So my auntie is Buddhist, not necessarily practicing, but she has quite a few of the beliefs, and she really wanted, when he died, his body to be left for, like, I mean, ideally, I think you'd leave a body for sort of, like, 24 hours, because you want, I think she was saying it's, like, the spirit to leave the body or something. But obviously, they can't really leave a body for 24 hours. They need the rooms. But they were so sweet, and they left him for 2 hours after he died, which is amazing. You know, they turned the air conditioning up and stuff. But in a hospital, you know, they just don't really have the capacity to do that, which is, again, completely fair enough. But that's a big difference. And I would say it was, we got a call, I think, the morning that he died, and they were saying, oh, his breathing's been slightly off. Like, we think, you know, if you want to come in, maybe come in. And the fact that they even noticed and called is amazing. And so we did. And then I think we got in at something like 12. And then he sort of seemed, well, you know, better, not better, but his breathing had gone back to, well, you know, relative normal. And we kept nearly leaving, but that was like, oh, let's just stay for like another hour. And no one was rushing us at all, but we just thought, oh, like, you know, we'll see him tomorrow. But then he died at, I think, 10 past five-ish. And obviously that was really stressful. It was just me and my mum in the room. But the nurses came in. I think my mum called one of the nurses or something. And they were just amazing, because we didn't know what to do. You know, it was really stressful. But they helped as much as they could, and they were very calm, and yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it's obviously a calmer experience than it would have been in the hospital.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, exactly. And you know, even if there'd been other people in the room, that would have been, you know, again, it's not like it's the hospital's fault, but that would have been so much more stressful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sometimes, like, I relive the day a lot. Similar to Pippa as well, we had a call in the morning saying that his breathing had changed, so that means, like, he's in the last stage, end of life. So me and my sister and my mum came in, and we do believe like he held on for us because we came into the room. I said, "Hi, Clive," and all of that. But then he did, I don't know what exactly it was, but he did like throw up. And so we called the nurses in, and like, they were very calm, as you said. And they just let us know that this is him passing away. And afterwards, my sister didn't want to go back in, but me and my mum did. And like, they put on the classical radio, which was actually really nice. And I remember asking my dad like loads of questions before he died, like, what's your favorite movie? And he always said, like, you know, Schindler's List is always one that sticks in his head. And so one of the first songs that came on, like, it was just classical radio, so nothing was planned, but the song, the theme song from Schindler's List came on, and me and my mum just started bawling even more. Yeah. But yeah, the nurses let us have as much time as we wanted, and even Sonia came, like, because Sonia was available. Really? Yeah, we called her, and she got to say goodbye to my dad too, as they got along well. So yeah, it was a difficult day, but it also like could have been worse in a hospital, as you said.
Well, like I said at the beginning, you're both so very young to have experienced death, aren't you? And particularly of someone who's so close to you, like a father. But I can see that you both appreciate very much the fact that you were in a calm, quiet hospice where people could look after you, take their time.
Definitely. And I think it's just surreal because it's one of those situations where literally no one knows what to do. Isn't, you know, a lot of times, well, I guess throughout my life, you know, I've been upset about something, my mum... I feel like my mum always knows what to do, or, you know, my mum, my stepdad, my dad, like all my family. But in that scenario, you know, we were equally as like, I don't even know what the word is, but
it's an unknown.
Complete unknown. It's like, what can you do?
So
I think just having a friendly face, and like, I really vividly remember I was really specific about, I wanted his eyes to close because I thought they would close when he died, but like, people's eyes don't always close. And I really like, I don't know why, but that just really stuck with me. And the nurse tried, and like, she couldn't. But even just having someone saying, like, no, that is normal. I know it looks a bit, you know, scary, but that happens. I was like, okay, this is not, it's not like he's still a bit alive, or, you know, you could just tell, and they're really lovely.
And then afterwards, did both of you find it hard to believe?
Yes.
Even though you witnessed it.
Still do. Like, talking about it now, I'm like, yeah, no way that actually happened.
Yeah, I mean, at the time, I was suffering with anorexia, so I had that on top of it. And I remember, like, afterwards, I didn't know how to act. And I literally said to Sonia and my mum, I was like, can I still do a workout when I get home?
Really?
Because that was also something, like, even though my dad had just died, it was still something that my brain was thinking about. And it was just... the following months afterwards, I got a lot worse with my anorexia. And now that, like, I'm recovered, I can see that that was just my brain trying to protect me, like, from the grief, because it's such a big thing and it's scary. And I just wanted to numb myself from all of it. And I guess it worked.
Yeah. Maybe you're recovered now.
Yes.
But I mean, I'm, you know, really grateful. I can't imagine how difficult that was. I was doing my GCSEs, though. I mean, I suppose completely different ballpark, but I remember making a revision timetable for that April, for that Easter. Mm-hmm. And now looking back, I'm like, why was I even revising? Like, you know, I'd literally go and visit my dad in the hospice and then do an hour revision or something. But I think similar in the sense of it was just a routine, you know, just a routine and, like, something that you know. But I did... So my dad died on the Saturday. I went back to school on the Monday. I don't really know why I did that, but I think you are just numb to it. It was just like, well, I know how to go to school. I know what I'm like at school, so I'll just do that. And then I had to do, well, I didn't have to do, but I chose to do my first GCSE 4 days after his funeral.
Was that kind of trying to give you something else to focus on?
I think so. And I think also I had just worked so hard. I think I was like, well, there's no point not doing them.
Your dad would have wanted you to do that.
Yeah. I think you'd have been like, You're absolute weirdo.
Yeah.
he'd
be proud of you.
Yeah, thank you. Got 51 out of 51 in that one. Exactly. But yeah, I think it's just so bizarre what, like, looking back, I'm like, I don't know why I did that, but
yeah.
Like, I think, like you said, it probably did help.
It's like
in some
a coping
way.
Strategy. Mm.
But then you both opted to have more help and support from the hospice afterwards, which is, I guess, why we're here, and how you met Sonia and so on. So tell me how that all helped.
So I started Sonia actually quite some time before Dad actually died. I think my dad wanted her to come in because, like, deep down he knew that his time was coming up. And then obviously she helped prepare me for all of it. And then she was there when he actually died. And simply talking really helps. And, like, you wouldn't think it does, but I remember when me and Sonia would have our sessions together, and I just felt so exhausted after it and drained, but it also felt like good at the same time. And then eventually coming to the family events at the hospice here, where you get to meet other children, and then our parents can meet as well, who have all gone through similar situations. Like, it helps you remember you're not alone, because it's such an isolating experience, but also so many people go through it. It's just not spoken about enough.
And that's one of the things I've found out through doing this podcast, is that people, anyone who's been bereaved at any stage, always seems to want to find someone in a similar position,
yeah,
who will really understand.
Yeah.
So you found each other, who both lost a father at around the same time.
Yeah.
It's remarkable, really.
Well, I honestly, like, I also can't remember such a big chunk of, well, not such a big, but a really considerable chunk of my life now, which is so surreal. Like, that was, I literally lived that, but I can't remember so much of it. But so I met Sonia last 2 weeks that he was alive, and then we had counselling, and it's even amazing that it's free. Like, we couldn't believe we got so much support, lifelong support, literally for free. I know my mum got counselling too, and that really helped
so
her. Yeah, and that's just a weight off people's shoulders. I think you're right, just talking about it, or even just someone saying you seem better, which sounds good, but like towards the end of the session should be like, you seem so much better. And I was like, oh, I do. Like, I couldn't remember it myself because I just couldn't remember the early sessions. But it was so confidence building, someone saying, like, you are a lot better.
So you're saying you were glad of her observations, that you had progressed, you'd made progress, so she could see it and you couldn't.
Yeah, or even, I don't know, I couldn't even really understand, I didn't even know myself anymore. So someone saying that was really useful. And she gave us, I think my favourite analogy is that your life is like a fishbowl. Is it a fishbowl or a bowl?
Yeah.
And grief is like this red, she showed me a diagram and it was red, but like this ball, the size of the grief never changes. But at the beginning, your life is a really tiny bowl and this ball is taking up the whole bowl. But over time, I feel like it's so realistic. Your life grows around the grief, and the grief will never ever change or go away, but it will, the perspective will change.
Yeah. I think that's interesting that you liked hearing that you seem better, because I was the opposite. I didn't want to, because it felt like I was letting go of that part of my life. And so I kind of, it sounds like weird admitting it, but I kind of liked the pain and the sadness, or I found comfort in it. I know that was my brain at the time wasn't good anyway. So it was quite disordered and all of that. But that just shows how everyone's different and everyone handles it differently.
But I get what you mean about the comfort though, because that was for the last 6 weeks of my dad's life, sadly, the overarching emotion was just I feel like sadness is too small of a word, but just such sadness that if you feel that same sadness, it's kind of reminds you of them in a weird way.
Yeah.
But then you know that you had happy memories too, but it's just familiar, I guess.
I've often used the word wallow, which I know is a pejorative word, isn't it? But I wanted to, during my grief, wallow. I wanted to be able to feel that deep sadness that you're talking about, because it proved that I must have loved my husband so much, that I was missing him so much, and I didn't mind it's almost like welcoming the sadness in, isn't it?
Yeah.
Mm.
Because it reminds you of what you really had and what you're really going through.
Yeah, I think I had a saying that was, grief is the price you pay for love. And that's true.
Yeah.
It's like hard hitting, but it's reality.
And that was allegedly written by the husband of one of my previous guests.
Really?
Whoa. Dame Catherine Mayer. Her husband was the British ambassador to Washington at the time of Princess Diana's death, I think this is right. And he helped write the Queen's speech, and it was the Queen who said those words.
That's really cool.
He was supposed to have written them. So, but it's so true, isn't it?
It is.
It's the price we pay for.
Yeah.
But I think when people say, like, oh, I loved them in past tense, I feel like that's kind of a misspeak in a way. Because if you didn't love them anymore, them anymore, it'd be so much easier. But I guess it's like kind of unrequited love in a way. There's no one else is there to receive it anymore.
So let's move on to the slightly brighter times. when you met and you found you had a lot in common and you became friends and you started fundraising and doing fun things together.
Best friends.
Yeah, so we met for the bungee jump. So Sonia had said to me that one of her other children is doing it. And so I was like, I want to.
I set the trend.
Hey, great.
And then we met, like, what was it? A month before or a week before?
And I walked in late to the family day.
She was late. But, like, the second Pippa walked through the door, I could tell, like, we were going to bond really well. I'd say you're more, like, what's the word?
Oh, no, what is the word?
Not extroverted, or are you?
Maybe. I feel like
I can be quite shy. And so, like, when I saw, like, Pippa came in and was like, hey, everyone. I was like, okay, good.
You've got a lot more confidence, I think.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, so we did the bungee jump together. And I feel like because we were both so scared, we just kind of, like, stuck to each other.
Well,
and really supported each other.
100%. But I think, I always think I was scared and you weren't. And you think that
you were scared and I was. And then we, like, stayed in contact and messaged. And think saw each other through another family event and tried to meet up outside, but with school at the time it was difficult. And then was it a year later we did the skydive together?
Yeah,
and that was pretty cool.
Gosh, that's brave as well. What was that like?
It was cool.
I feel like I didn't really register what a skydive was, because we went up in the plane and I was like, oh, fine, and then we got to the edge of the plane and I was like, oh, like, you free fall. I knew you free fall, but I kind of forgot. Like, they'd said this in all the briefings, but I was like, oh, yeah, free fall.
Yeah.
I didn't really intake what free fall meant, but I think seeing, did I go first or did you go first?
You went first.
I went first. I think being, you know, if I'd done it on my own, if I'd done any of these things on my own, it would have been so much more scary and I just think less memorable.
Yeah.
Doing it with you was like.
So tell me what it feels like standing on the edge looking down, knowing you've got.
Well, there's only one way down now.
I screamed, did you?
I tried, but you can't. You go so fast.
Yeah, so it's actually quite difficult to. I don't want to scare anyone, but it's quite difficult to breathe at first, or they try to teach you a different way to. Because, like, all of the wind and that's coming at you. But then when the parachute goes up, like, that's the best part.
I think it's the best thing I've ever done, like, hands down. Because, and bungee jumping too fat, but skydiving is so much more exhilarating.
I would say I preferred the bungee jump and so preferred the skydive.
Like, yin and yang.
Yeah.
And bungee jump is fun, though.
Mm-hmm.
Saw Windsor Castle upside down.
Oh. Yeah, it was a lovely view because we did it right opposite the lake at the hospice. And so it was nice, like, I felt like my dad was watching on the other side.
That's sweet.
Yeah.
So do you come back here often? And is that part of the reason that keeps you connected to the hospice? Because you think you remember your father's here more?
We do quite a lot. Like the other, what was it? Like a few months ago, we came here for coffee.
Yeah.
Because it's nearly 3 years since my dad died next Wednesday, 23rd, and we're going to come and look at the Book of Remembrance, where it has everyone's name who died on that day. So, like, we'll come back then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I come quite often with my mum and like just walk around the lake. And we like to walk around to where Dad's room was outside because at the moment no one is in it. Like the ward isn't open. And it's just nice like sitting there and reminiscing about it all.
Mm.
Like I wouldn't say, even if you're just in the cafe and like you know what goes on at the hospice, like you know that people aren't doing very well, but like it doesn't feel like it. Every single person I've spoken to, even if they haven't been back to the wards, they say it's such a lovely place. And is endearing the word?
No, yeah, 100%. I would say more often than not I feel comforted by going to hospice. I think it was only at the start I was like, oh, I'm not going back. And I think even just it's so easy now because our lives have moved on is the wrong word, but our lives are so different now.
Evolved,
yeah. It's so easy to like not feel any grief, but in a sort of bad way. Or personally, like because I'm at uni, sometimes when I'm at uni, I'll come home and I'm like, oh, I actually just like repressed it for 6 weeks or something. So I think sometimes it's slightly weird going back to hospice because I know I'll feel it, but you kind of have to feel it sometimes. Like, it's just part of it.
Yeah.
And I know you've raised a lot of money between with all these efforts you've been up to. You've raised a lot of money between you. Do you know roughly how much?
I'm trying to work it out.
I think we said it was just over £4,000.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. And it was quite equal between us.
Yeah. And so I used to go to First Flat School. And I know they're doing a continued fundraiser for the hospice because it's such a local charity. And it's helped me, and I'm sure it's helped loads of people in the school. You know, whether it's grandparents or whoever, you know, unfortunately, probably quite a few parents. I think they raised 10,000.
Wow.
But they're trying to make it like a long lasting, continued support rather than a one off donation because hospices are so expensive to run.
Well, that's something else that you've helped towards. So, between you, you've done an amazing amount of good, haven't you? Yeah. I'm sure your fathers would be so proud of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you both so much for talking to me, Pippa and Grace. It's been lovely to meet you both and hear your stories.
Definitely.
Thank you.
Death is never easy, but there are ways we can help each other through it. And if you've found any of these episodes helpful, please think about liking and sharing. And if you can help spread the word by telling just one other person, thank you. And a huge thanks to Joe Barrett, without whom these podcasts would simply not be possible. You can contact us on hello@livingwithdying.co.uk.